Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the value of the MBTI with the 30-something coach here on the Life Coach Radio Network. I'm Carrie Spaulding, the 30-something coach, and I'm so excited to have you listening in today. So my main work is helping 30-somethings who aren't where or who they thought they'd be with their careers, relationships, and lives generally. And I work with people who are experiencing what I call 30-something panic and feeling like, I have so much to figure out in my 30s. So I help you use that panic as a catalyst to create what you want in your life. And I'm also the founder of 30-something Summer Camp, which is a virtual getaway and workshop series where you can connect with other 30-somethings who are figuring it out just like you. And I live in Philadelphia and do most of my coaching over the phone, which means I get to work with people from all over the place, and I really love that. So today we're going to be talking about what the MBTI is, how it can help you, a little bit about what the process is like of doing the MBTI, and some tips about using assessments effectively for yourself. And we also have a special guest who has been using the MBTI for more than 20 years with her clients, so I'm excited about that too. So just a quick overview of the MBTI. MBTI stands for Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, and we'll talk in a minute about how it got that name. So the assessment is the world's most widely used and most trusted personality assessment, and it can be one great lens, tool, and springboard to choosing and creating the career and the relationships you want. So many people choose to take the MBTI during a time of transition when they're trying to make some important decisions. So some of my clients will like to use it as a tool during a career change. It can also be useful at a time when you just want to understand yourself and others better so that you can work more effectively in an existing situation. So the MBTI can be really helpful in relationships, whether they're professional relationships or personal relationships, helping you understand yourself and how you're showing up, and also understanding your partner or your colleagues or your boss and what's going on for them and how they see the world. The tool indicates your preferences for doing basic things that we'll talk about in a little bit more detail in a minute, and it can help you understand why you do the things you do, including how you communicate, how you make decisions, how you deal with change, how you experience and act when you're under stress. It can help you resolve conflicts more effectively and lead better and much more. And it can also help you understand why other people are acting the way they do and help you to really work with and communicate with, partner with, problem solve, collaborate with, and influence other people more effectively. So the MBTI has the potential to add a rich to the discoveries you make during your career and relationship work. So just a little bit of history here, a little bit of background on the MBTI. The MBTI is an assessment that was developed by a mother-daughter team, Catherine Cook Briggs and her daughter Isabel Briggs Myers. And Catherine and Isabel studied psychiatrist Carl Jung, who wrote a book called Psychological Type. And Jung theorized that we have preferences that are inborn, that they are the way we are. And while we are influenced certainly by our environment and our culture, Jung's theory holds that there are certain preferences that are unchanging and natural for us. So just to help you kind of get a sense of the idea of a preference. Right now, look around you, see if you can grab a scrap of paper and a pen or a pencil, something to write with. And go ahead and take that pen or pencil and just sign your name the way that you normally do. And I'm guessing that you're done. Probably didn't take too long, so notice what that was like, how it looks. Does it look like it normally does? Was it pretty easy? And then switch that pen or pencil to your non-dominant hand, the hand that you usually do not write with, and sign your name again. So I can't see you right now, but I'm guessing that it's taking you a little bit more time. For most people, it takes a little bit more time. Most of the time, you either can't read it quite as well because it's not your dominant hand. It can tend to be a little bit messier. Or you might notice that it's actually because you were concentrating so hard and forming the letters, you might be able to read it well, but it looks a lot different from the way that you normally write. If you practiced, you could get better at using your non-dominant hand. If something happened that you had to use your other hand to write for a long period of time, you would definitely be able to do it more easily, and it would start to come more with less effort and less energy because you would have practiced it. But it would probably never get quite as natural or quite as easy as using your dominant hand. And that's really the idea of preferences. We have a preference for one hand over the other. It's innate. And if we were asked to explain why, we probably wouldn't even be able to, right? You're left-handed because you're left-handed, or you're right-handed because you're right-handed. And it doesn't it's not good nor bad. It's just natural for you that you have a preference for one over the other. And in the same way that you can use your non-dominant hand, we can all do all of the preferences. We can all flex to one side or the other. One just takes more energy. So in Jung's theory, and these are the preferences that Briggs and Myers were also measuring in the assessment, there were four dichotomies of preferences. And these are the dichotomies, these are the preferences that the MBTI measures. So it measures where we get our energy, and that's using introversion or extroversion, how we prefer to take in information, that's using sensing or intuition, how we make decisions, using thinking or feeling, and how we deal with the outer world, or general orientation to the outer world. So again, we all do all of these, and I think oftentimes that's a really natural immediate reaction to hearing the preference pairs. Well, I do both, right? I think and I feel. And of course you do. So it's can be kind of confusing at first when you see these pairs. But it's really important to note, first of all, that these words might not mean what you think. In the assessment, they mean something somewhat different from the misconceptions that we might have. So, for example, introversion doesn't necessarily mean being shy or not liking people. There can be some stereotypes that are just not true about some of these words and some of these preferences. Judging doesn't mean being judgmental. And, of course, we all think and we all feel. And a lot of people who feel things very deeply spend a lot of time thinking about the things that they are having strong feelings about, and vice versa. People who are big thinkers definitely have feelings about the things that they think about. But that pair is really all about the approach that we take to making and implementing decisions. And it has to do with, you know, people who prefer thinking in general tend to make decisions by being as objective as possible and stepping back from the situation to try to remove themselves and examine pros and cons objectively. And whereas people who prefer feeling tend to be motivated by preserving harmony, and they tend to look at situations based on their values and the values of other people and honoring those values. So, and that's a very brief description, but just to give you a sense, of course we all think, of course we all feel. It's really about how we make decisions. So your combination of these preferences, introversion or extroversion, sensing or intuition, thinking or feeling, judging or perceiving, creates a four-letter type. And that type can tell you a lot about how you show up in the world, how you see the world, how you make sense of it, and and how you thrive when you're in your at your best. And it can also help you understand those things for other people. So I just want to give you a little bit of background about my experience as the MBTI and kind of why I chose to invest in learning more about it. I was always aware, or not always, but as a kid, I was aware of the MBTI. My mom had a book about it, I think, and I just kind of vaguely remember flipping through it. I didn't really understand it, but as a kid, even I knew that there was such a thing as ENFJ or INTP, these four-letter types. And my real meaningful experience with the MBTI started when I was feeling really confused about my career and about some of my relationships. I got a book called Do What You Are, which is a book that looks at personality type and careers. And it helped me to start thinking about how my personality was influencing me in my job, like the job that I had at the time. And it also helped me to start thinking about what situations I really tended to thrive in and where maybe I might be unknowingly making things not work so well for myself or for others. But my biggest fascination with the MBTI was really relationships. I was really interested in learning about how personality impacts personal and professional relationships. And as I started to dig a little bit deeper, thinking about the MBTI really helped me to understand certain relationships, so where there was miscommunication or misunderstanding due to differences. And for me, learning about other preferences has been really helpful in, first of all, understanding myself better and what kinds of situations I do best in and what kinds of situations I need to give myself a little extra support with. And it helped me learn how I might be impacting people without even realizing it or how I might appear to others. It also helped me take other people's sometimes very mystifying behavior less personally. So as I would read about different preferences and oftentimes preferences that were, you know, the opposite of my own, I would have these oh moments where I would realize, okay, this is not that this person is trying to be, difficult, or that this person doesn't care, or you know, it's just that she sees the world differently, or he sees the world differently, or it makes more sense to him to take a different approach. And it really helped me kind of get under the hood and understand better what that's like to see the world a different way. The MBTI material, and this is, again, before I became certified to work with it professionally. This is just when I was exploring it personally. It helped me to at least try to communicate in a way that would be more helpful to people with other preferences rather than just drive them crazy. And the framework also helped me to understand some things about people that had always been really big differences between us, as I made mention of before. So I became a certified practitioner of the MBTI relatively recently. I decided to go through the training for a few reasons. One is that I'd found type to be a really useful lens in my own explorations of career and relationship questions, and now I work with 30-somethings every day who are asking huge career and relationship questions, and I sort of had personally experienced that it can be one really helpful tool. So another thing is that some people were asking for it. I would, you know, when people were inquiring about coaching or, you know, current clients would occasionally ask me, do you know about the MBTI? And while I did know about it from my own sort of informal study, in order to actually work with the MBTI, you need to be trained, you need to go through a training program. And I wasn't able to provide that to my clients when they were asking for it. And assessments can be really helpful tools. And also many clients who had taken it, I would have conversations with some clients who had taken it, and they would just bring up, they would mention to me their type, and they would say, you know, I'm an ENTP, and so yada, yada, yada. This is something about me that I understood when I did that. And they would mention how helpful it had been for them. And I wanted to be able to better, you know, understand what they were sharing and be able to make connections with them, because I could tell that people were really excited about what they had learned. And finally, the real clincher for me, or a big one anyway, was that I found out that the MBTI goes a lot deeper than just the four-letter type. So sometimes people, when they're looking at the MBTI, they say, well, that's just ridiculous. Like, how can there be only 16 types of people? There are way more than 16 kinds of people in the world. And that's absolutely true. But what I learned is that there's actually, there's first of all, with the four-letter type, it's not just about those four letters. It goes a lot deeper than that. It's all about type dynamics and how those different preferences interact together. And so just one preference difference can make a huge difference in your overall type. And another thing that really excited me is that there are actually different facets of each preference pair. And there was a kind of report that I didn't know about, an advanced form called the Step 2 report, that goes a lot deeper and provides more depth into the different facets of the four-letter type. So of introversion and extroversion, there are facets to each of those sides, and that people can actually have facets that are out of their regular preference, which helps to kind of account for the differences within all ENFJs, for example, are not the same, and the Step 2 report can help you see some of those nuances and differences. It's also absolutely true that every single one of us is unique, and this is just one tool. The MBTI is just one lens to describe parts of us, some parts of us. It certainly isn't the be-all and end-all, and it doesn't describe us in our entirety. But when I found out that this tool could go a lot deeper than just the four-letter type, I got really excited about it, and I got really excited about using the Step 2 report and looking at all of those facets and also learning about how the dynamics work and learning about how the preferences work together. So I want to talk a little bit about what this process is like if you decided that you wanted to take the MBTI. So one thing that surprises many people is that the assessment itself is just a hypothesis of your type. It is, you know, of course, it's reliable, it's valid. There have been a lot of studies by the people who developed the MBTI to, you know, continually be looking at reliability and validity. That said, any assessment is going to have the potential to be influenced by factors such as, you know, well, what environment are you currently in? It's a self-reported assessment, so you're going to be influenced by the kinds of things that you're being asked to do, whether your type has been encouraged or discouraged, whether you think that there's a right or a wrong preference to have. And by the way, there's absolutely not a right or a wrong preference to have. They're all, neither is either better or worse. They're just different. And so the assessment itself is a hypothesis of type. It's up to you as the person taking the assessment to decide what your true best fit type is, and your practitioner can help you with that. So what happens is that you'll select somebody to be your practitioner. If you work with a coach, that's a great person to work with, if you have a coach who works with the MBTI, because, you know, the assessment itself is cool and the interpretation process is helpful, but it's really great if you can go a little bit deeper and continue to work with it and really get the most out of it. So your practitioner sets you up to take the assessment, which can be done really easily online. You can do, there's a paper and pencil version, but there is an online version. You will have an interpretation session, and you'll work with your practitioner. And in your first session, you first learn about each of the four preference pairs in more detail, and you hypothesize your own type. So you come up with your first hypothesis of, without even looking at your report, what do you think your type is? And that's your first hypothesis. And then you see how you answer the questions on the assessment. You get your report, and the report is your second hypothesis. And sometimes they match and sometimes they don't. So you go through a process with your practitioner where you then, using both of those hypotheses, you decide your best fit type. And there are materials to help you with that, and there's also the knowledge of your practitioner to help you with that. The person you're working with can ask you questions to help you really get clear and decide your best fit type. And you'll also most likely get a book called Introduction to Type by Isabel Briggs Myers, which she wrote because she wanted everybody who took the assessment to have access to this book, and it equips you with information to reflect further on your type, begin to apply it to your life, learn more about it, learn more about the other type. So that's kind of how it works to do the process. And then if you decide that you want to go deeper, there are a number of other reports that you can work with, all generated by the same, you know, it's not like you have to take the questionnaire over and over and over again. And so you can get the Step 2 report, which goes into the details of the different facets. There's a career report. There's a stress report. There are a number of different kinds of really interesting reports. So that's how it works to take it, just to kind of give you a sense of how it would work if you decided to work with the MBTI. And I want to talk a little bit about what you can learn from it. So one thing you can learn is how to understand yourself and how others see you, and how to use your strengths more effectively and also your potential blind spots. The report and your type and learning about your type can be very validating because there might be some ways that you've always felt different or like there's something wrong with you, because especially if you've been in an environment where many people have an opposite preference from you, you might feel misunderstood or like there's even something wrong with you that you're not doing things the same way. In a family, for example, where everybody in the family is on one side of the preference pairs and you're on the other side, it can be hard for everyone, not just for you. It can be hard for the person who feels different, who is different, but it can also be hard for the rest of the people who just genuinely don't understand and might have some real misconceptions about why that person is behaving the way that they're behaving. You can also learn how to take things less personally or judge less when people act in a certain way because you can understand them better. It's not that they're fill in the blank. It's just that they naturally see and deal with the world differently. It can help you communicate with other people so that they feel comfortable and heard and so you make sense to them. So I have a couple of comments from people who have done the MBTI. And one person said, I did understand my husband a bit better when I learned that he was a thinker and a judger, opposite from me. And I adjusted the way I communicated with him using fact and logical arguments and evidence rather than hunches and feelings with him, although that is what speaks to me. I would then look for evidence or research to back up my hunch because he liked things presented to him from authoritative sources. That's one comment of someone who was telling me how it was useful. Another person said, with the guidance of someone who had training in interpreting the MBTI, I found it useful in understanding more about how I respond to certain life events and how I interact with other personality types. It has given me a little more perspective on how I respond to challenges in the workplace. As for my personal life, I've used it to guide conflict resolution in my relationship. I found it informative when navigating times when my partner and I experienced and interpreted events differently. The MBTI can also help you think about potential careers you may be interested in. One person said, I took one years ago, and that's how I ended up in the social work field. And somebody else said that I'd say the designation, meaning the knowing the type, has helped me understand myself a bit. In some ways, it has helped me to not feel bad when I want time to myself, for example. And in other ways, the description of my type has given me language to use to describe myself. Here's what I mean. My friends always describe me as really laid back and easygoing, but I never thought of myself that way because I know that certain things get me very upset or offended. In other words, I'm easygoing except when it comes to those few things I really care about, in which case I have very clear ideas of right and wrong, as well as high expectations of behavior and a somewhat unrealistic desire for fairness and justice. The descriptions I've read of my type help me put all those feelings into words. in terms of work and personal relationships, it has helped me realize my desire for fairness could be stronger than others, and I have to work on being tolerant and understanding so I don't continually get frustrated by people. So those are just a few ways that TICE has helped some particular individuals. And I want to talk about just a couple of cautions and how to use assessments effectively. So assessments can be a really great complement, what you already know about yourself, and to other approaches that you can take to learn about yourself and to make decisions and to be most effective. So assessments can shed additional light on you as a person and on your situation. They can help you learn how to approach your goals more effectively. They can help you gain insight into other people, how to work best with them. They can give you ideas for what you might like to pursue. They can be very validating because they help you see you're not alone. They help you maybe think of things you wouldn't think of otherwise. So they're a lens. They're a springboard. And they're one tool that you can use to help you get insight and spark ideas. The assessment should really open the door to a conversation in which you can explore what resonates and what doesn't resonate. So it's really, I really want to kind of caution listeners, never let an assessment limit you. Labels and categories can be helpful in that they give us a framework and a language to think about and to talk about and understand ourselves and others. But that said, no assessment is the be-all, end-all. Use information you get from the MBTI or any other assessment as just one perspective. One, you can think of it almost like a little flashlight or a magnifying glass combo where you can spark insight and get more nuanced understanding of yourself. But keep in mind, it's just one lens, and it shouldn't ever be something that kind of dominates all of your decisions. For example, career decisions should be based on a number of factors, not just your personality type. And people of all personality types can thrive in all careers. So don't let it limit you. And also keep in mind that the value of some assessments unfolds over time. So with the MBTI, it's really common for people to spend weeks after first verifying their type or even just receiving their results and hypothesizing type to observe themselves and make discoveries that relate to what they learned in the assessment. So be patient and keep an open mind. It might take a while to really reap the benefits of an assessment report. One person who took the MBTI brought up another really great caution, just something to pay attention to. Sometimes there can be a real temptation when using assessments to pigeonhole people. And there was one person who said, I've taken numerous such indicators for various professional conferences and leadership programs. To me, the purpose seems to point toward learning the type of others so we may manipulate our way through situations. I think that a great deal depends on whether the practitioners and clients use the information as descriptive or prescriptive. And then she said, I do believe that knowing others' innate motivators can be helpful in the never-ending battle to not take things personally. So I think that she brought up such a great point. Really important that you use type or any other assessment to learn about others, but not to put them in a box or manipulate them or anything like that. So another person said, the MBTI is a tool, and to be careful about defining one's identity, personal or professional, with it. It's fun and enlightening, but people can change, grow, and develop. And the MBTI, just a couple of other points, it must not be used for things like selection. That's against the ethical use. It must always be optional and not mandatory. So it's really up to you as the taker of the instrument to decide, first of all, whether you want to take it at all. No one can ethically compel you to take it. And also to decide whether to share your results and with whom. So I want to welcome a guest that we have with us today. And I'm so excited to have Barb Hetzel with us. She is somebody who has used the MBTI for, I believe, 28 years. I can check with her when she's on the air with us. So she's the owner and founder of Ridgetop Coaching, which is a life and leadership coaching firm that engages leaders and teams in developing and expanding their good world. Barb is an accomplished professional in the field of training and organizational development, and she has over 25 years of experience helping others discover and embrace their true calling. So Barb has all kinds of wonderful certifications and qualifications. She received her BS in psychology from East Stroudsburg University, and she has two master's degrees from LaSalle and from Fairleigh Dickinson University. She has studied ministry and leadership. She's certified, of course, in the MBTI, which is why she's joining us today. She's an organization development certified professional and a certified professional coach and an Energy Leadership Index master practitioner. And she was certified in the MBTI in 1986. So I'm going to welcome Barb. Let's see, Barb, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks, Carrie. It's great to be with you today and also with any of the listeners out there who are part of your show today and talking about the MBTI.
So, Barb, I was so excited when I was first making the decision to get qualified to work with the MBTI. I learned that you had been certified in 1986, and so I was so excited to take advantage of your expertise and your experience with the MBTI. And I'm curious, what got you interested in the MBTI in the first place, way back in 1986?
Well, that, you know, it's kind of like you did say, you know, it is 28 years ago, and it's like kind of, you know, even when you said it, I'm like, holy cow, it just sounds like, it just feels like yesterday, you know, so it's kind of, it's a little bit surreal when you start thinking about things that you've done in your life, and it was that long ago. But I think what initially intrigued me about the MBTI is that I was introduced to it and asked to take it. Now, I don't remember the context in which, you know, it kind of came into my life, and they said, oh, let's take this assessment. Okay, you know. But I remember in the process of it and also in the debriefing of it, in the interpretation session, I was really intrigued by how, well, at the time, you know, I was probably in my mid to late 20s, how accurate I felt it was, that it was, pieces of information that it's one of those experiences where you kind of shake your head, you go, that's me, that's it, you know. and it was such an interesting experience. I'd never had any opportunity to take anything. Now, I was a psych major in college, you know, so I took a lot of the, you know, we all take testing and measurements, you know, kind of course, you know, to get your degree in psychology. But I was not introduced to the MBTI until after I was out of college, and so I found it to be I just loved it, and so that's what drew me to get my own certification in it.
And it's just amazing. It's an amazing experience, isn't it, to encounter language that describes you perfectly or a framework. It can be a little stunning. Like, wow, it's a kind of an incredible experience when that happens. Whether another thing that comes to mind is sometimes you read a book or you hear a song and you think, oh my gosh, like it's like something saw inside my soul. So it can be a pretty incredible experience. So how do you?
Go
ahead.
I just wanted to jump on that really quickly too. That I think at the time that I did it, I was, you know, part of a group of people. I wasn't just an individual seeking something out or an individual asking me if I would be interested in taking this. You know, I was part of a group event. And it was really, you know, there's something really valuable in the MBTI that gets verified when you take it and you get this information back and you're one of several people in a room saying, yes, that's me. You know, so there's some, you know, that you talked earlier about validity and reliability just in terms of the instrument and the assessment itself. But that's, you know, I know that's not very scientific, you know, but just having that reaction of other people in the room, you know, verifies it for people too.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I have to say, when I was making the decision to become a practitioner myself, I had heard about it, as I talked earlier. I had heard about it from clients that it had been useful. I had found it useful. But one of the things that I wanted to know is, before kind of making the decision to really invest in learning more about it and developing expertise in the area, was, okay, like, is this really as useful as I think it is? And I've had so many people, I would talk to people, and I've heard so many people say, the MBTI really did change my life. Or one person actually said, oh my gosh, that assessment rocked my world. She said it just completely changed things for me, because I'd always felt, in her case, she'd always felt so different in a particular way, and it helped her feel like, oh no, this is normal. Like, this is an okay way to be. But that's just one example. I think what you were saying about, even if it's not necessarily scientific, it really does increase your buy-in to any tool when there are people in your life who have found it to be really beneficial. And when you're in a room full of people, nodding and saying, oh my gosh, yes, that's totally what it's like, it can really help you, see the value in it, or confirm the value that you're experiencing yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious about how you use the MBTI in your work with clients, or maybe even in your own life. How has it been useful for you since this amazing moment where you recognized yourself in your type?
I'll answer the second half of that question first, because I think that's the piece of how you use it in your own life. No matter what circumstance or situation you're in, whether it's interpersonal or in a work situation, that I really think the ultimate value of the MBTI really kind of shows itself. And one of the things that, you know, obviously discovered early on in having a different language now, or having additional language, I like to say, with the MBTI. I am much more aware of why I do the things that I do, and why I like to do the certain things I do, and why I like to do them certain ways. And it can become pretty comical in interpersonal relationships. You know, like, I'm the one that can make a decision on a dime, but my partner cannot. You know, so it's kind of interesting how that kind of comes into play, but we both recognize that's, you know, in any given situation, one might be the strength we need over the other, you know, and so recognizing that, you know, there's a value in being, you know, in being the judging type, as MBTI calls it, as opposed to being the perceiver, you know, which is, you know, somebody who's open-ended and, you know, likes to get more information, and, you know, maybe, you know, may not feel really compelled to make a decision. Whereas if I don't make a decision pretty quickly, I'm beside myself. You know, so just recognizing yourself in situations is really important. And I also think that, you know, when you start to apply the MBTI and your knowledge about yourself based on your preferences, you can begin to not take yourself so seriously either. You know, you can start to recognize, like, oh, okay, that's what's happening, and let me take a step back, and let me regroup myself. And I think it's a way, it keeps you honest with yourself, and it also is just a way to kind of say, you know, really, life is life, and, you know, you kind of have to make your way through it no matter what your type is, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, it's true. I think that it's really common for people learning about the preferences to start to laugh. I've noticed that almost every time that I've worked with somebody with the MBTI, there's a moment where somebody giggles a little bit, and I think it's a giggle of recognition. When you kind of learn to not take yourself seriously, there's something about seeing these preferences delineated that helps you kind of, you know, notice, okay, yeah, I can see how I do that sometimes. And it is kind of funny when you have a little, it can put a little bit of distance and help you look at it in maybe a more objective way.
Yeah, yes, that's it completely. And then the first half of your question was asking me how have I used this with my clients or with work situations. And I've had some tremendous opportunities to use us in a lot of different contexts, which is really what makes working with the MBTI so much fun. I have used it with church groups. I've used it with youth groups. I've used it with teams in work environments. I used it with executive teams, like the C-suite folks. And each time that I've had the opportunity to do that, besides giving people individual information about themselves, especially if it's a work team or it's a leadership team, I like to do a lot of things that says, okay, this is what's going to help you accomplish things. If that's the goal of the team is to get things done, this is knowing this information about each other, knowing this information about yourself is what's going to help you get things done more efficiently, and it's also going to help you get things done to a greater deal of satisfaction for not just for you as an individual, but for the whole team. So if I know that, I know if something, if my team has a project, for example, and I'm trying to, and I need somebody to really do some research on, let's say, statistics about something. Well, I'm not going to give that job to the person who's necessarily the intuitive or the feeling person. I'm going to look for somebody on my team who might be more of a thinker and more of a sensing person because they're going to love those details. And so if I know that about the other people on my team and I know that about myself, then I know what I'm going to be most likely to, first of all, volunteer for and which member of my team is going to be most successful at getting that task done most efficiently.
And I think that you bring up such a good point that it can help teams be more effective and sort of to delegate things according to who's going to actually be best at and also enjoy those tasks most. And I think that it can really help teams appreciate the different things that different people bring to the table. So it's I think not uncommon for without the understanding for those differences to be frustrating, but when we can kind of understand and articulate them, it can actually increase our appreciation for difference, kind of like you brought up actually with your partner, that without the understanding of those differences in, between judging and perceiving, that can be a very, very frustrating situation at work or in a partnership. But when you can communicate about the differences, you can actually benefit from them. And you can sort of have a greater appreciation for, your perspective would actually maybe be more helpful here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, just in terms of not necessarily in work situations and not necessarily just in terms of team environments, but just even just, interaction between colleagues or interaction between you and your boss, or if you're the boss, you and somebody who reports to you, is if you know that there's somebody in your team who is an introvert and you're an extrovert, well, knowing that can help you to kind of, say, okay, give somebody some time to think about something, let them take the question away and come back to you. And it's okay to identify, time frames, but to ask somebody who's an introvert for an answer on the spot, you're not going to get their best answer.
You might get something because they might feel so pressured to produce an answer. There was actually somebody in my training group, I remember, who prefers introversion and shared, if I'm really pushed to give an answer, I might give an answer, but it's not till I've had time to think about it that I come up with what I really think or what's actually my best contribution.
Right. That's exactly right. And so if you're part of if you're in a work environment, or even in a family environment, we all function in systems. In our life and in our culture, well, definitely United States culture, because that's the only one I'm familiar with. But even just, you think about the different groups that you might be part of or that you might interact with. And if you have some knowledge about the Myers-Briggs, or you just have knowledge about yourself, even if you don't know, you know, other people, you know, what their type is, you know, and it's not really not necessary to know that. But if you know what yours is and you know and you're aware of the assessment itself, you're going to know that not everybody thinks like you and not everybody prefers to gather information the way you gather it, to, you know, spit it out the way you want to spit it out, you know. And it's the more you know that, the more you can be a more effective communicator. And then also bring to whatever the bottom line is, so to speak, you know, everybody's best efforts rather than people feeling like I just have to answer for the sake of answering. You want an answer, here's an answer, but it's not going to be their best. So if you know that, then it's wonderful to be able to incorporate that into how you're functioning as a group. No matter what comprises your group, whether it's a social group or if it's a business group.
So I'm curious about do any particular stories stand out for you? Any aha moments with where the MBTI has really impacted your clients, or, you know, of course, only if you have permission to share about that, or have there been situations that really stand out to you as times when the MBTI has made a huge impact?
Wow. I probably can talk certainly in terms of generalities, not necessarily in terms of specifics, you know, with specific clients. But it's not uncommon when I'm working with someone and they're looking at their own responses. They're looking at their own assessment and beginning to have, you know, these light bulbs go off about, you know, who they are and why they react and how they act towards certain situations or towards certain people. But I think the biggest aha moment comes for people, not in terms of, you know, yes, that's me kind of recognition, but when they can start to apply it to a situation. Oh, I get it. So that's why, you know, my boss and I might be butting heads, or that's why I really liked this boss when I had her and I don't like this one now. Or that's why that relationship probably didn't survive because of X, Y, and Z, or because, you know, we were opposite, or we, you know, came at things differently. So I think it's not so much in the ahas that are the most important. That's my own interpretation, but seem to be most important for people. It's not the recognition ahas, but the application ahas. Yes, this has some bearing on this relationship out here, and whether that's personal or it's a work-related relationship. I think those are the greatest. From what I've seen and the feedback I've gotten from clients, those are the greatest game changers.
And, you know, what's so cool is that when you do have this understanding, you can actually really change the situation. You can change the dynamic by understanding these things. And I don't know, but you were talking about, oh, that's why that relationship didn't work, or that's why it was tough with that boss. It's, of course, not that. There's nothing you can do about that. But I know that I've had the experience of thinking about a particular relationship that's no longer in my life and thinking, oh, I wish I'd known this stuff then. You know, it would have been really helpful. I think, you know, there are times when, looking back, I think if I had looked at this from a tight perspective, it might have helped me make some changes, or each of us could have flexed in a different way or understood better where the other one was coming from.
Right, and that doesn't mean that the relationship was not, you know, doesn't mean that even all that shifting or understanding doesn't necessarily mean the relationship would have survived, but it may have been a more pleasant departing.
Yeah. And I think it's important, you know, I had somebody sort of was learning about the preferences and was saying, I could never be with someone who, you know, had this opposite preference. Sort of that was her first interpretation. And then we started talking about how sometimes those differences, like you were saying with your partner, can actually work really well. And so I would just caution people against thinking you can't thrive and survive with people with different preferences. Of course, there's a million factors that go into relationships and whether they end up working out or not. Type is just one. But, you know, I think it's something, it's an easy misconception that we can't thrive with people who have a different preference from us. And your example that you were sharing about yourself is a good example of that, of how sometimes opposite preferences can work really well together if there's understanding and a mutual commitment to communication and learning from each other.
Yeah, and I think your point, Carrie, about, you know, if, you know, whatever your Myers-Briggs type is, it is not the be-all and the end-all, and it is just one factor in what makes people compatible or not compatible or able to, you know, work together or live together. You know, I think that's a really important piece to emphasize that, you know, the Myers-Briggs doesn't say anything about what people's values are, what their principles are, or, you know, what kind of things, you know, bring them joy. And if those are commonalities that you find in your interpersonal relationships and you happen to be opposite Myers-Briggs types, there's no predictability there whether or not you're going to get along or not. You know, it's all those other kinds of things. It's one of many kinds of things that determine, you know, compatibility or just, you know, that you like somebody.
Yeah, just one lens, one particular kind of flashlight we can use to kind of shine some light. So I'm so curious for your perspective on what I think is a really common question. So many people, I've heard people say, I took the MBTI and then my type changed. And of course, we, you know, as practitioners, we know your type actually doesn't change, according to the theory anyway, but type develops over time. So according to Jung's theory, the first half of life is spent confirming and using our strongest preferences, and then the second half of life is developing the lesser used type-related functions to add balance, to add depth. So, for example, a person who, you know, might have spent their early life really developing intuition and thinking, at midlife and later might make more use of the less preferred functions of sensing and feeling. So I'm really curious what your perspective, as somebody who has been working with type for a long time now, what insights you have or have you noticed about development of type over time?
Yeah, I think that definitely, you know, I'm in agreement that, you know, essentially your type is your type, you know, but that there are so many, as you go through life and as you experience more things and more peoples and more situations, you know, hopefully you mature as you age, and that you do develop other parts of yourself. You do develop other aspects of, like I like to call it, you know, how you walk in the world. But I think, you know, if you could think of this is how I think of the Myers-Briggs type. You know, there's something about the Myers-Briggs type that's the core of you. But that doesn't mean that, you know, as an extrovert, I don't welcome the opportunity for some peace and quiet. You know,
right.
And I probably welcome the opportunity for some peace and quiet now that my, you know, so much of my life has been filled with noise and chaos, you know, so, you know, having some peace and quiet is, whew, that's great, you know, but I'm still an extrovert though, you know, there's a part of me that, you know, I would go to a party and I would, doesn't matter how many people are there, you know, I love to talk to people, I love to find out about them, I find it very energizing, so that piece about being extroverted is really my preference. I feel at home there, but doesn't mean that I can't take a vacation every once in a while and be an introvert. You know, so I think that understanding that, you know, life is really about balance. And in some ways, the MBTI type kind of helps you to start to see where your balance could be. You know, that you,
and be conscious of where you might, you know, how another way to look at it might be. So, you know, you can sort of ask yourself, okay, if I was looking at this, making this decision from a thinking perspective, you know, how, what might I be asking myself? What might I be considering? Or, you know, if my sister who has a preference for judging were here, how would she be handling this, you know, this information? And so, yeah, I think it's also when people have been very focused on or excited about creating some of that balance, whether, you know, focused on it maybe because they're in a job that demands that they do a lot of it, or excited about it because it's kind of a new way of being for them. Sometimes they'll take the MBTI and think, oh, my type has actually changed. And what you're, we've been talking about is how actually it might just be that the way that you answer the questions changed a little bit because you're growing and you're evolving and you're developing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best things about the Myers-Briggs is that, you know, it does provide you with a framework to grow and develop. You know, you can do the assessment and you can, you know, come out with your four letters and just kind of say, okay, that was a really nice experience, and then never use the information again. And that's fine. That people do that, and that's okay. You know, it wasn't, you know, it didn't speak to them or whatever. But if you're somebody who is committed to your own personal and professional development, you're going to take opportunities when you have, you know, when you do an assessment like the Myers-Briggs, and you're going to, you know, say, okay, what can I do with this in order to grow professionally, or what can I do with this in order to grow personally? And if you already have that mindset toward that, you know, that we're always growing and developing, then your eyes are always going to be open to looking at how can I continue to use this information as I move forward in my life. I think anytime you have experiences in life, whether you look at them through a lens of, you know, a particular model like the Myers-Briggs, or you just understand that this is, you know, you've experienced something, if you just reflect on your experience, that's automatically going to take you to, you know, to a place where you're continuing to grow and develop as an individual. And the Myers-Briggs is just one of the tools that you can take along the way.
Well, Barb, your insight is so appreciated, and it's just been a pleasure and a treat to have your expertise shared with us today. And I'm curious, if our listeners would like to reach out to you, maybe even to take the MBTI with you or connect with you in another way, how can they reach you?
Well, first of all, thanks, Carrie, for having me as a guest on your show today. I love the Myers-Briggs, and it's wonderful to have an opportunity to talk about it today, and certainly to, you know, share our conversation together about how the Myers-Briggs can really help somebody navigate either their lives or their work. So, if folks want to get in touch with me, you can read my website is www.ridgetopcoaching. That's RIDGETOP coaching, like the ridge of a mountain. You can also find me on Facebook at Ridge Top Coaching. If you want to email me, you can email me at info@ridgetopcoaching. And those are the best places to get in touch with me. So thanks again, Carrie, for having me on the show.
Thank you so much, Barb. Thanks for being with us. So you can reach me at carrie.spaulding@gmail.com, carrie.spaulding@gmail.com, or visit www.carriespaulding.com. Again, it's carriespaulding.com or 30-somethingsummercamp.com. And I want to just give you a little heads up about a couple of shows that are coming up on the Life Coach Radio Network. And Sunday at 9 p.m., we have Mark My Words with Certified Life and Business Coach Mark Shaw. He's doing a personal power hour with Barbara Holder, Certified Professional Coach, about what is personal power and how do we actually lose it anyway. Barbie knows and is going to tell all in an exciting interview with Mark. Then on Tuesday at noon, we have Fun to Fortune, Entrepreneur Startup Success with Coach Jeff. Coach Jeff talks to people who have created fun businesses and uncovered their fortunes in the process. And then on Thursday at noon, we have Walk Your Talk with Leanne. And Leanne is a coach who specializes in working with adoptees and their families. And so that's the focus of her show. So if you'd like to learn more about the Life Coach Radio Network, you can check out our website at lifecoachradionetworks.com. We have shows on every day, almost every day, and sometimes a few different shows in a day because we have the Life Coach chat channel and the International Life Coach Radio as well. And we certainly love to hear from our listeners, so feel free to share any comments after the show and reach out to any of us. We'd love to talk to you. All right, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed learning about the MBTI. It's been a real joy sharing it with you and wishing you all a wonderful day.